O Allah, give favorable answer to my prayer. Acknowledge the praise I sign in worship. Let there be peace and harmony between me and my friends for the sake of Muhammad, Ali, Fatima, Al-Hassan and Al-Hussein. Verily, thou art my benefactor who provides with bounties, the aim of my desires, the ultimate destination of my hopes in my future life and during this short life. Thou art my God, my Master and my Lord. Welcome my friends, keep our enemies away from us. To save us from the evil mischief, divert their attention. Let the true world come out in the open, supreme and dominant. Refute and condemn the folly, rendered contemptible. Verily, thou art able to do all things.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Amir al-Mu'mineen's journey towards Basra in Iraq, in one of the journeys. His army had camped in a place where a group of Hujjaj were passing by in their caravan. When they were told that this is the campsite of Ali's army, they have settled down here for resting before continuing, they diverted slightly to go and see their imam. And then people gathered outside the tent of Amir al-Mu'mineen, waiting for him to come out. Abdullah ibn Ja'far, the friend, the cousin, and a very close friend of Amir al-Mu'mineen, was very free with Ali. Nobody was that much free with him because of their closeness. So he came inside and he saw Amir al-Mu'mineen, Khalifat al-Muslimin, sitting on the ground, doing what? Repairing his sandal, which was broken. Stitching the strap of the sandal. Can you find any leader in the world like that? The entire Muslim empire of the time in his hands. He has thousands of people around him in that campsite. Even relatives and friends and sons. But now that one strap of the sandal has broken, he sits down himself and starts stitching it. And Abdullah bin Abbas, a cousin, a friend, like a brother, he says, Ali, what are you doing? From his perspective, Ali could spend time in more productive things. What are you doing? There are people who love you. They are waiting outside to see you. Imam didn't reply, continued his work until he's finished. Then he said, put the pair of sandals there. And now he asks Abdullah ibn Abbas, قَيِّمْهَا. Abdullah ibn Abbas, give me a value for this. What is the worth of this pair of sandals? It was so used and torn, worn out. Abdullah ibn Abbas says he doesn't have any value. Not even one dinar or dirham, whatever is the shorter amount of the currency those days. Less than that. This is where Amir al-Mu'mineen says to him, by Allah, this pair of sandals that you say is worthless is more dearer to me than ruling over you and your people unless I am able to establish haq and justice in society. You talk about hukumat, power and government on one hand, and this worn out pair of sandals on the other hand. Ali says, I prefer this over ruling you unless I am able to establish justice and right among you.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother, Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Black and white.
Las fuerzas reaccionarias imperialistas siempre sacan cuentas alegres.
The imperialist reactionary forces always rush to rejoice. They think that by murdering and martyring the main leaders of the resistance, the fight of the people is over. They do not know the reality in Latin America.
No conocen la realidad. En América Latina tenemos muchos ejemplos. El asesinato.
We have many examples. The assassination of Zapata in Mexico, Sandino in Nicaragua, Commander Ernesto Che Guevara in Bolivia, and our comrade Salvador Allende in Chile.
Y a nuestro compañero Salvador Allende en Chile.
The reactionaries always claimed that this was the end of the struggle and the hope of the people for national liberation, democracy, and self-determination.
Y por tomar el destino en sus manos. Lo mismo hicieron hace ya 4 años atrás.
They did the same thing 4 years ago in Baghdad. The Americans, under the order of Donald Trump, a president who recognized that he gave the order of the assassination of Soleimani.
Soleimani, que era en ese instante el comandante, ¿no es cierto?, de la fuerza de la resistencia.
Who was at that moment the commander of the resistance forces, the articulator of the anti-Zionist and anti-imperialist resistance not only in Iran, but also in Yemen, Syria, Iraq, Palestine, and Lebanon.
Líbano. Pensaron que de esa manera la resistencia iba a desaparecer.
They thought that this way the resistance would disappear. They made excessively optimistic calculations. Today, Qasem Soleimani is more alive than ever, despite the fact that the reactionaries insist on liquidating his memory.
Atacan a mansalva colocando artefactos.
They attack in cold blood by placing explosive devices in an act of tribute and remembrance of Iranian people. 4 years after his murder, they murdered 93 people, leaving more than 300 injured, some critically.
Más de 300 heridos, algunos muy graves. La verdad es que ya.
The truth is that at this moment, there are already, according to the Islamic Republic of Iran, 96 Americans accused of the murder of Soleimani.
El asesinato de Soleimani. Bueno, pero los pueblos.
But the people have built a majestic Soleimani, as have been the other heroes at the international level who have fought against the imperialism that are still alive. Allende is alive. Che Guevara is alive. Soleimani also grows and becomes stronger in every struggle, in every resistance, in every mobilization, in every attack on the occupation forces in Palestine, on Zionism, on the Zionist entity in the fight to liberate from the river to the sea, the entire Palestinian land.
Desde el río al mar, toda la tierra palestina. Porque Soleimani.
Because Soleimani had the quality to understand that it was impossible to continue with the talks. And it was time for the resistance to speak. For the resistance of the people to speak, to hit the enemy.
Hablara para golpear al enemigo. Los enemigos sionistas norteamericanos crearon bandas.
The enemies, the Zionists and the North Americans, remained terrorist bands of Daesh, or what is called. The architect who marked the end of the band, or at least reducing them to the minimum expression, was precisely General Soleimani. The people, the countries that fight for democracy, for freedom, for self-determination, owe a lot to Soleimani.
Por la democracia, por la libertad, por la autodeterminación, le deben a Soleimani mucho, ya que se puso la cabeza.
Since he stood his head against the scourge of imperialism and Zionism that was Daesh, Soleimani lives among the people. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Por Hispan TV, soy Eduardo Artes. Hoy, desde la República Argentina, tenemos...
Today we have a valuable guest from the Republic of Argentina, Kamel Gomez, member of the Islamic community and head of the Argentine Arab Union. He is a professor at the State University of Mar del Plata, Argentina. Kamel Gomez, welcome to Black and White.
Bienvenido, Kamel Gomez, a esto Negro y Blanco por Hispan TV.
How are you? Good evening from Argentina, Mar del Plata. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Kamel, en las demandas populares, las demandas de las naciones, de soberanía, de independencia, significan unos sacrificios y unas luchas enormes.
Kamel, people's demands about sovereignty and independence entail great sacrifices and struggles. And here, struggles produce exceptional leaders in a special direction. Here, we're talking about Soleimani, martyr Soleimani. In your opinion, what unique characteristics did he have that today he is remembered as the leader of the resistance throughout West Asia and at the same time as the architect of the defeat of Daesh?
Hoy día ser reconocido como el dirigente de la resistencia en toda Asia Occidental, y al mismo tiempo como el artífice de lo que fue la derrota de ISIS o el Daesh.
Bueno, desde Indo-Afro-Latinoamérica es...
Well, from the indigenous African region of Latin America, talking about Qasem Soleimani has its strengths and weaknesses. The weak point of talking about a revolutionary leader, a martyr, is that he was in a remote area, but his news and developments are followed very closely. I would consider that region in Asia to be the heart of the Arab and Islamic world. But at the same time, there are strong points in this regard. These are not only related to Qasem Soleimani's strategic and geopolitical perspective, his ability to command and determine the fate of battles, but the main thing that our nations can understand is his deep spirituality. Many have talked about Qasem Soleimani's path and cited many characteristics from him. His first characteristic was that he was always present on the battlefield. He was not a general who would make decisions from place away from developments, away from military barracks. He was always present in the field. An example of this was the 2006 war in Lebanon, when Israel invaded. We can talk about the war against Daesh in Iraq. We always see that Qasem Soleimani is present and active, and he's leading the battles. This made us remember him as a very strong personality in the spiritual and moral dimension. Imagine that a great leader comes to Iraq to command the battles and has a decisive role and also knows the leaders. They talk together. Therefore, Qasem Soleimani listens to the conversations of the simplest soldier to the main commanders of military operations. And in this way, he was completely familiar with the developments in the field. His method was very different. It was not only analyses and texts and documents that guided him, but listening to everyone in the battle scene was one of his main characteristics, which in this way gained a very wide familiarity of what was happening on the scene. He was aware of the situation, of his forces, and above all, he knew about the enemy. One of the things that we usually hear about him is the capacity of his individual resistance. He had a strategic patience. This word is heard a lot these days in West Asia, especially in Iran, which is known as the axis of resistance. This strategic patience understands the times of struggle and the times of tactics and strategy, and it also grants its followers a personal resistance. Those who had spent some time with Qasem Soleimani know well that he was a person who showed no signs of discontent, and if he even had personal pain or discomfort, he would deny it to be able to carry out his necessary responsibilities under different circumstances. Being a detail-oriented person is another interesting feature that those who knew him and quoted from him usually mention. He was in the details of every single issue, to the extent that he was said to be very influential in Russia's decision to intervene in Syria. In a meeting while some Russian military commanders had unanswered questions, according to Arab sources, Qasem Soleimani was the person who gave Putin assurance. Well, we don't want to claim that he would say what Putin should do. This is not our topic. But I want to point out the power of analysis, behavior, and method of presenting strategy and considerations regarding Russian intervention and non-intervention, which helped Vladimir Putin to make a decision regarding the developments in Syria in 2015. And without a doubt, he was known for his humility. Qasem Soleimani was not a general and a commander who was proud of his great victories and great battles. In fact, he was the kind of person who always tried his best not to be seen, and we insist on this topic. He paid a lot of attention to each of his fighters, beyond their military rank and role. And of course, we need to add that he had a great spiritual vision.
A todo esto sumémosles una gran visión espiritual.
Kamil, please, we will take a short break here and continue immediately.
Estamos con Kamel Gómez desde la República Argentina. Ya hicimos la presentación, que es un profesor, ¿no es cierto?, miembro de la comunidad islámica y al mismo tiempo presidente de la Unión Árabe Argentina. Kamel.
We are with Kamel Gómez from the Republic of Argentina. We introduced him. He's a professor and member of the Islamic community, and at the same time, he is the head of the Arab League of Argentina. Kamel, one of the characteristics of Qasem Soleimani that has helped a lot in confronting Zionism and North American imperialism in West Asia is that he has put the will of the people in the center of the scene. I mean, besides fighting spirit, weapons, military capability, and large military industries, production of modern and ultra-modern weapons, his main focus and concern has always been on the will of the people in the nations of the region, because it is clear that he had crossed the borders, Iran, Yemen, Lebanon, Iraq, Syria, and become one of the designers and organizers of resistance throughout West Asia.
Las fronteras, no, de Irán, Yemen, Líbano, Irak, Siria, y se transformó.
So what do you think about the idea that he had, that it is the nations that make the decisions, and not just the ultra-modern capability of military weapons? Please.
No, y no solamente la capacidad ultramoderna de los medios militares. Por favor.
Hay un libro del recientemente fallecido Kissinger que se llama Nuevo Orden Mundial.
There's a book by Kissinger who died recently called The New World Order. In this book, he analyzes Asian countries and has dedicated a chapter of the book to Iran. In that book, Kissinger asks that Iran should decide whether it is a country or a case. In response to this question, among other issues, the role of Soleimani is raised. Iran is a case, a revolutionary case, which today somehow guides the efforts of the majority of the Arab and Islamic nations in the region. If we see today, in these days and months, how Israel's strategic environment is completely messed up, one of the executors of this current situation is a person named Qasem Soleimani. Today, the Zionist regime is involved in several fronts. Let's think about Yemen. Think about West Asia and Gaza, about South Lebanon, about Syria, and about Iraq. In all these fronts that I mentioned, the importance of Qasem Soleimani has been determined, and the world nations acknowledged it. And also, the importance of the Islamic Shia spiritual dimension of Qasem Soleimani cannot be denied. As he himself said clearly, let us note that spirituality is very important here. This is in contrast to the vast technological support that Israel enjoys today, which has spent over $60 billion against the Gaza Strip to date, and all it has done is kill and kill civilians. This strategy is the answer to this Western war machine and the cause of the decline of the West geopolitics, a strategy that has clearly outsmarted the American politics and realized that this policy will lead to failure. It has realized that this defeat must come at the hands of the resistance, an active part that prevents the realization of the goals of the U.S. and Israel in the region. We see this every day in Iraq. We see in Syria. And more importantly, this has blown the covers of America and Israel and the region for many times. Today, everyone knows that the U.S. government has created Daesh. There is no doubt that this terrorist organization has been reactivated and is trying to launch attacks again in Syria and recently in Iraq. But we see that behind all this, Qasem Soleimani could undoubtedly see the traces of the U.S. government regarding Daesh and the military support of the Zionist regime. Today, this is very clear for Iran and the axis of resistance that they should confront America's discourse in the region. Today, the U.S. government is completely in crisis and cannot impose its plans, and the reason why it can no longer impose its plans is mainly due to the Qasem Soleimani's views and its ties to all the nations that have decided to resist these plans.
Así es, Camel. Sin lugar a duda, el sionismo es una construcción del imperialismo. No, y la suerte del mismo está en íntima relación con la suerte del imperialismo.
Yes, that's right, Kamel. Undoubtedly, Zionism is the offspring of imperialism, and its fate is tied to the fate of imperialism. For this reason, observing this unity and understanding that the struggle is long, but the final result will be the victory of the nations, all the sacrifices being made are against the declining West and North American imperialism, which is also declining. Despite the multifaceted invasion, soft invasion in the field of culture, deep cultural invasion, in the political field, they say that the only way to understand democracy is the understanding of it in the West.
En lo político, planteando que la única forma de entender la democracia es como se entiende en Occidente. ¿No? En lo militar, sujetando a los países a sus tratados, sometiéndolos.
In the military field, they bring the countries under their own agreements and surrender them. And in the economic field, they turn the countries into colonial enterprises and prevent the sovereignty, governance, and freedom of the people and nations. Qasem Soleimani, in my opinion, understood this very deeply, that the structure of imperialism can only be defeated through the mobilization of nations. I don't know if you think the same or not.
Esta construcción del imperialismo solamente podía ser derrotada por la movilización de los pueblos. No sé cómo tú concuerdas con esta posición o no.
Es que es absolutamente clara y necesaria. Sin la fuerza...
It is quite clear and necessary. Today, without the strength of the nations, this resistance is impossible. During these days and months, we have seen this issue in Gaza and Lebanon. We have seen it in Syria and Iraq a few years ago. It is true that millions of people have been martyred. When we count the number of people who lost their lives, today the Arab and the Islamic world has the conditions that Algeria had in the past against France. And we can point to many examples in this regard. Even in other places like Vietnam, also the resistance of our nations in Latin America. It's always been this blood that has watered the seeds of resistance. And this issue cannot be included in the algorithm of American Zionist computers. They don't understand how possibly they could be defeated with so many weapons and ammunition and equipment and supports. It is complained that every day 10 children in Gaza lose at least one leg. This is something that happens on a daily basis. And there are many such examples. But the nation of Palestine resists. We must remember that when Qasem Soleimani was martyred in Baghdad, he was on a diplomatic mission. This diplomatic mission was related to bringing Saudi Arabia and Iran closer together. Years passed, and recently we saw the pictures that an agreement was reached between Saudi Arabia and Iran with the mediation of China. There is a long way ahead of us, but regarding imperial powers, I should say that the end is in sight. Now let's leave these things out of consideration.
Así es. Nos queda un minuto. En este minuto.
Yes, that's right. We have 1 minute. In this 1 minute, along with the final words of today's program, we ask you to tell us about the vision of General Qasem Soleimani and his growing role in the struggle of the nations of the world, and specifically the nation of Palestine.
Soleimani en la lucha de los pueblos del mundo, particularmente del pueblo palestino.
Creo que en cada...
I think that in the killings of every single child and woman in Israel's bombings, besides the deep pain that is undeniable, we can vividly see the signs of the frustration of the aging West in terms of geopolitics as they are fighting with Israel's genocidal madness. And there is no other way left for them except to harm and kill indiscriminately. The vision is the project of resistance. The project of resistance belongs to free nations who resist, struggle, and are ready to sacrifice the most important asset of a human being, which is life. And these nations sacrifice their lives because they want to live with dignity, and they want to live by preserving their sovereignty, culture, past, and traditions. Because they don't want to abandon thousands of years of their history. We are talking about thousands of years of civilizations in Iran, which are even older than Islamic civilizations. We are talking about Persia. They don't want to give away their pride and lands like what we see in Palestine. I believe that Qasem Soleimani helped build an intelligent resistance against one of the worst enemies of humanity throughout history.
Muchas gracias, Kamel, por haber estado hoy día.
Thank you so much, Kamel, for being on our show today. And without a doubt, the nations will win. And the greatness of General Soleimani will create a school for us. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your invitation.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asle zinde ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by famous Iranian Shiite orator and lecturer Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
آدم نباید نسبت به مؤمنین سوء ظن داشته باشه، بدبین باشه. شما تو قرآن همتون سوره حجرات رو دیدید.
We Muslims must not be pessimist about our other Muslim brothers or sisters. We have in the Holy Quran, Surah Hujarat, that we must avoid different types of pessimism and suspicion. Many of our pessimism are sins. We must not be pessimist about our friends, colleagues, relatives, spouse, or neighbor. We have in our narrations that even if we see something unpleasant in our surroundings, we must not consider it as something evil or a sin. For instance, if your friend reaches you without saying salams, or he shows inattentive towards you in a meeting, you must not be pessimist about this behavior of his and think badly about him or her. You cannot refer to such behaviors as complex or disease. Maybe your friend's mind is busy with something. Imam Ali alayhi salam stated, always find a justification for the strange behaviors of your friends. And if you couldn't find any excuse or reason for his behaviors, try your best to make one. This sentence of Imam Ali means that we must not be pessimist about some of the strange behaviors of the people around us. In this way, we might not keep any animosity inside our hearts. Thank you very much, dear listeners of Arab English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.ir Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio. علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة. The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons
letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of a guide to managers based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are focusing on the 53rd letter of Imam Ali alayhi salam, the letter which he wrote to Malik Ashtar, in which he draws out a few important points with regards to the qualities of managers and those who are supposed to be recruited in important managerial positions. And in one of those phrases he says, وَتَوَخَّ مِنْهُمْ أَهْلَ التَّجْرِبَةِ وَالْحَيَاءِ. That means, recruit those people who are people of experience and those who possess shyness, chastity, and bashfulness. They have the state where they feel shy, they are embarrassed of doing something bad, certain bad things, and they have bashfulness in them. And that generally what we say is shyness, inshallah.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, we discussed previously that, you know, shyness is a very important emotion that is a force that can stop a person to do many bad things. It's not a negative emotion. As you know, some of the philosophers, the moral philosophers of the world of today, they are bent upon, you know, removing the covers of shyness, especially in women. You know, you know, if you want to know there is a dictatorial leadership, a leadership that wants to destroy the people, then see their treatment of women. See how they consider women and what they want women to do. If there is a leadership that wants to remove shyness from women, then know that this is a problematic leadership. It has there are reasons why it wants to do that. Anyways, that's not the discussion. The discussion that we have today is that shyness can be a very positive force. Let me give you an example. If you have a person in a managerial position who does not care about lying, does not feel shy, does not feel embarrassed if he lies and afterwards it is discovered that he was a liar. If you just a few, one or two years ago, if you remember, the there was a leader with yellow hair, very clear, you know how many lies he spoke, right? How many lies? But he didn't care about it. The next day would come with his crisp suit and, you know, speak another lie. Why? Because unfortunately, What happened gradually is a destruction of the moral fabric gradually. Why? Because of the constant destruction of the value of chastity and shyness. If a leader is not shy and is not embarrassed about, you know, having ties with oppressors, look at the world today. Look at all some of these leaders, how much they are complicit in the crimes of this nation that is killing children. You know about this nation that is killing children today in Gaza. They don't care. They are shaking hands with this leadership. They are supporting this leadership brazenly. How comes? Because they are not shy. They are not embarrassed of the fact that they are friends with a killer, with a murderer, with a destroyer. They don't have this shyness. Where is their humanity? Their humanity is being destroyed because they don't have these values. They don't care about what people will think, what the world will say. They don't care about the spiritual realm and what the spiritual realm is thinking about these evil things that they are doing. So you see, shyness can be a very strong force to keep a leader in position, a leader in doing what is right and what is correct.
IRIB English Radio presents a detailed commentary of the Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, on the program Gate of Knowledge.
Now, we now understood that there are two forms of shyness. One form, which is a form of shyness that is negative, that stops you to do what is right, to do what is right and what is correct and what is laudable and what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants from you. And there is another form of shyness that stops you from doing wrong, doing evil, from being unnecessarily free in whatever you want to do, you know. These are the types of shyness that are good, that are positive. And for a leader, this shyness is very important. This form of bashfulness is very important. That when he goes into the society, he is really careful that he doesn't do something that is embarrassing, that is wrong, and in front of the eyes of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He has something that protects him from doing that. I think all leaders should strengthen this guard in them. They should use this as an opportunity to strengthen this guard so that they do not fall into wrongness, into lying, deceitfulness, cheating, being friends with bad guys and mafias, right? Sometimes this shyness can even stop you as a leader from doing what is even normally lawful. Like, for example, normally people can eat fruits and nice, you know, chicken and all those, you know, tasty foods. But as a leader, I feel shy because I feel, look at all those poor people. Can they afford this food that I'm eating today? This shyness stops him from eating that. And he becomes a good person because of that. Don't you see how positive this force is? And how good this emotion is that is being rid today, that is being stolen from the people of the world today? And don't you see this is the reason why many of these leaders, so-called leaders of the world, today are facing a moral crisis? It's because they have not taken certain emotions seriously that can really stop them from moral degradation. We pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that we can apply these wonderful teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in our lives and be able to, inshallah, lead to the training of good leaders and managers. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو وبالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
شو مان يعني
بازار
If you look around, nearly every object you see is made of raw material extracted from a mine. Basically, if you can't grow it, you have to mine it. The extraction of minerals, metals, and fuels from the ground is one of humankind's oldest industries. Never more than now has society been so dependent on greater variety and larger volumes of mined products. So it's no surprise that mining fuels our modern world and makes economies grow. Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. I'm your host Alireza Ikhtiarzadeh, and this week we will be exploring the mining industry while shining the spotlight on the machinery used in this sector. We wanted to see what types of machines are used and who is actively manufacturing them. Plus, we wanted to understand why the mining sector is crucial to the national economy and how manufacturers contribute to its progress. So, let's roll out the show. Our quest for answers led us to Shahrud city in Semnan province, where we visited a company specializing in manufacturing various mining machines. With nearly 20 years of experience, this knowledge-based company is active in a host of fields. It conducts research, development, and production of equipment needed in various industries. That being said, it also manufactures a variety of excavating, drilling, trenching, and digging machines. The life of any product begins in the design room. This company has researched and developed these machines and has perfected their performance. Optimizing the machine size, speed, and power to carry out tasks has also reduced the expenses related to projects where these machines are used. These machines can be used in agriculture and road maintenance, among other medium-scale construction projects. Most materials needed to make these machines can be purchased inside Iran. Steel sheets, gears, wires, and whatever else is required to build the machine can be domestically found. And if a design requires a particular part, this company can make its own molds to create the parts. You might find it interesting that these machines are currently imported as there is a high demand among mining companies for equipment. So, indigenizing the production of mining machines has been a big step towards supporting this sector. Another benefit to local production is it saves the country millions by cutting back on imports. The beating heart of this knowledge-based company is its research and development department. Here is where all the magic happens. This area employs some of the most talented and experienced specialists to research, design products, and optimize existing ones. But that's not all. The research and development department also studies future projects. This company also dabbles in making equipment used to harness renewable energy. This company not only uses its own expert staff, but also stays up to date on the latest knowledge by maintaining links with the Industrial University of Shahrud. It collaborates with academic institutions and exchanges knowledge with them too. Furthermore, this knowledge firm also uses capacities and resources made available by Semnon Tech Park. Among its services, it offers the execution of projects through contracting. For example, it has used its machines to complete piping and installation of telecommunications manholes for intercity networks. Another example is carving drainage systems in agricultural fields using its trenchers. Over the years, this company has made a variety of award-winning machines, such as drilling machines equipped with fiber optic lights. Moreover, this company has invented 6 products that have been internationally patented. This knowledge-based manufacturer has never stopped eyeing the future and has plans to expand its production units and product portfolio in the coming years. The company we just mentioned is part of the puzzle that helps Iran's mining sector thrive. It is one of Iran's key industries, as the country is one of the top 10 mineral-rich nations globally. Roughly 7% of global mineral reserves can be found in Iran, making it one of the most important mineral producers in the world. Numbers from Iran's Trade Promotion Organization show that last year the sector saw a growth in exports. Government officials, however, say export figures could still be much higher. Furthermore, efforts have been placed on encouraging research and production in knowledge-based firms to increase specialized production, such as mining machines, in the market. And here is where knowledge-based companies play a big role. Okay, time for me to take a little break from here and divert your attention to a report that I made earlier in the week. Everyone, welcome to another special feature of Bazaar. Today, we are discussing energy production, specifically electricity production through gas turbines and some of the problems that come with it. So, in different times of the year, mainly during the summer, we get sporadic blackouts at peak hours, at one of the peak hours, let's say around 12 at noon until 4 to 5 p.m. Because we cannot store electricity, electricity production must always match electricity consumption. But because of the temperature during these hours, during this time of the year, during the summer, high temperatures in particular negatively affect electricity production through gas turbines. So first we're going to take a look at, well, why that is and how gas turbines work. But and also we believe that we have found a solution at Sharif Innovation Center, in one of the companies that has made that solution, and we're going to check that out too. Why do high temperatures negatively affect the performance of a gas turbine? Well, bear with me as I try to explain how a gas turbine works through this prototype that they have here. This is the prototype of the device that would be used at scale. This is not at scale. So imagine this is the gas turbine. How it works is that it sucks air through these air ducts, and the temperature of that air is very important. I'm going to get back to that. The air goes through a compressor here. The compressor compresses the air, which we would need the compressed air for the combustion chamber. A combustion chamber essentially makes this work exactly like a plane engine or a car engine. A car engine is slightly different because the movement that it produces is linear, whereas the plane engine has rotary movement. So that's exactly what it is like, because it produces rotary movement. So in the combustion chamber, we add a certain type of gas to the compressed air, and then a little spark creates an explosion, and the explosion, the high pressure air, would then spin our turbines. And the turbines, which have movement in them, are connected to a generator, and the generator's job is to turn movement into electricity, which goes through the power grid and then gets to whoever needs it. Now, the thing here, the important thing about the air temperature, is that we need ideal conditions, ideally, for the machine to work at peak performance. And that ideal condition is at sea level 15 degrees Celsius. So the air, ideally,
is 15 degrees Celsius, but we don't get that kind of temperature in a lot of places, especially in a hot and dry climate. So we have a couple of options to alleviate that problem. Number one, the inefficient option is to work the compressor a lot more, which would use a lot more energy, but that's not even the issue. The issue is that there's a lot easier of a way. So what they have found at TEPCO company is that they have instead tried to use an ice storage unit to work as a thermal storage compartment, because you know the thermal storage capacity of ice is 100 times more than that of the water. So here they create ice essentially at midnight until the morning when no one is using the power and the air is colder, because that is what happens. The difference between temperatures during the day and temperatures during the night in dry climates is pretty massive. So it's a lot easier to create the ice during that time. So they do that so that in the morning or at noon during peak hours, 12 p.m. to like 4 or 5 p.m., they have the ice to cool the water that is in the storage, and the cooled water goes through a radiator behind the air duct so that the air, the probably hot air that comes through the chamber, is cooled using the water that is in the ice storage compartment. That water cools the air down to like 15 degrees and gives us ideal conditions to work with. So the compressor doesn't need to work that hard. We get our ideal conditions through the ice storage unit. And that is how they are able to offset the amount of electricity that we would lose if we were to use the compressor a lot harder. And that's pretty much how a gas turbine works as well, but also this is the innovation here. A better way to cool the air and get a gas turbine to work at peak performance. There are other less efficient methods of cooling the water that comes through the chamber. Both of them are called evaporative cooling. The first type is done through a wet media, most likely a cooling pad that you see in water coolers everywhere. So how it works is that there is a lot of surface and they run water through it, and the air is going to go through this cooling pad. So as the air goes through the cooling pad, the water absorbs the heat from the air and evaporates. Evaporation is an endothermic procedure, which is heat absorbing, which means that the heat is absorbed from the air and transferred to the water, which evaporates, making the air that runs through the cooling pad a lot cooler. This is a rather wasteful method because, well, you're using water, because in the method that I showed you, you don't use water. The water is just circulated back into the system. This one, you use water, and it's just generally not that efficient. The other method is even more inefficient. You see it in a lot of places in like outdoors restaurants. They spray water through the air that is going to go through the chamber, and the extremely tiny water droplets absorb the heat from the air and evaporate as they are sprayed. This also absorbs heat from the air, and that is why when you go through the spray of water, you feel a cool breeze, because the air is a lot cooler, because its heat is transferred to the water molecules. So both of these methods are pretty inefficient, and I just wanted you to note about other methods that are used, but they are definitely more inefficient. And the chart is a demonstration of how our thermal storage system would perform in an actual 400 megawatt hour power plant system. When the ice is getting used during in midday, it bumps up the production by a difference of 60 megawatts in a regular 400 megawatt hour power plant. All right, now it's time for me to take a little break here and hand it over to my good friend out in the field who's prepared a report for us.
In ancient Iran, felt was already used in the production of numerous kinds of clothing, bed clothes, floor carpets, and different kinds of sacks. In fact, the Iranian world may have been an important center for the development of felt technology. In the modern world today, felt or namat has found its way to industries of all kinds in various forms.
You just can't imagine how crowded this place is. Whenever I want to talk on the phone, I have to find a sign-up place to be able to talk to you. It's really crazy. God, in today's chaotic society, stress is an issue that many of us suffer from every day. But what matters most is trying to find the stress sources and try to find effective solutions. For this reason, today...